A heavy sheet of rain crashed against the ground, roof, and windows. It became a fast patter with an occasional heavy thump that made Otto, Sheed, and Grandma crane their necks. "Is that hail, Grandma?" Otto asked. "Can't rightly say. The weatherman ain't called for no rain to begin with, so this surprise storm could be a surprise hailstorm, I suppose." Thump, thump. Those thumps were the heaviest yet, and the house shook. A picture frame leapt off the wall, shattering the glass on the wood floor. "Oh," Grandma said, "I don't like that at all. Let's get in the closet." Thump, 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 thump. Otto and Sheed shared a look, both thinking their own version of the same thought. This wasn't a normal storm. Grandma left the den and yanked open the closet door beneath the staircase. "Boys, right now." They weren't going to argue, but before he could get his butt in gear, Sheed heard a new sound, a smack instead of a thump, and it traced back to the nearest window. When he saw what caused it, "Grandma, you should probably see this." She stomped to him. "This better be important because I'm not in the habit of repeating myself, Rashid Austin. Oh." Grandma stiffened next to Sheed, so of course Otto needed to know what the fuss was about. He strolled to them, while the whole time the odd hail-like noise outside went rapid fire. Thump, thump, smack, smack, thump, smack. Next to his grandma's cousin, Otto saw why. The heavy somethings thumping down among the torrential raindrops weren't hail. They were frogs. Fat, green frogs.
You're listening to the Here We Read podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating diverse and inclusive books for kids and adults. I'm your host, Sharnae Gordon, your fellow reader and book lover. I'm really excited about today's guest, who is Lamar Giles. I enjoyed our conversation so much about his family life and his professional life. Lamar and his wife are first-time parents, so they're navigating their way through the early days of parenthood, which is always an interesting process. One of the things that stuck out the most to me during our chat was when Lamar advised people to practice finishing. No matter what it is that you're doing, just get in the habit of finishing every single time. That's how you build and strengthen your consistency muscles. I love that phrase so much that I wrote it down in my journal, and also I put it on a sticky note to remind myself each day when I'm able to just finish, no matter how big or small the task at hand is. Lamar Giles is a well-published author, and he's also one of the founding members of We Need Diverse Books. His most recent novels include Not So Pure and Simple, as well as The Last Mirror on the Left and The Last Day of Summer. I will let Lamar also talk about some other recent books, as well as some forthcoming books that we can all look forward to during our chat. So after a few bookish headlines, you'll hear from Lamar Giles. Buckle up. It's going to be a fun ride. Hi, Barrington.
Hi.
Which book are we going to be talking about today?
The Real Santa by Nancy Red.
All right. Do you want to read a few pages of the book?
Yes.
All right. Let's get to it.
I love, love, love Santa. His happy face is all over our home, sitting on our Christmas tree, smiling on our gift wrap, and stitched onto my sweater. Santa's on our front door, our mailbox, even on Grandma and Grandpa's car. Every Christmas Eve, my grandparents drive to our house and spend the night with us. It's one of our family traditions.
Thank you so much for that reading, Barrington. Did you like this story?
Yes.
What did you like the most about this book?
It includes Christmas.
It includes Christmas, yeah. And what does Santa look like in this book? Does Santa look like our family? What does Santa look like?
He's black.
He's black, yeah. Santa is black or brown, right? Just like ours, our family, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So check out this book if you're interested. Again, it's called The Real Santa by Nancy Redd, illustrated by Charnel Pinky Barlow.
Bye!
For this week's Bookish Headlines, I want to bring your attention to the National Book Awards. Readers from everywhere are invited to the exclusively digital National Book Awards ceremony, which is taking place this year on Wednesday, November 17th at 7 p.m. Eastern. As I said, this year's event will be virtual only, and it will be hosted by comedian, author, and actress Phoebe Robinson. If you'd like to register, you can head over to the National Book Foundation website, which is nationalbook.org, if you'd like more details. There are quite a few bookish things to celebrate or acknowledge during the month of November. November is National Novel Writing Month. It's also Picture Book Month and National Family Literacy Month. The first Saturday of November is Book Lovers Day, and November 1st is Authors Day and National Family Literacy Day. So lots of bookish days to look forward to during the month of November, these as well as more. That's it for this week's Bookish Headlines. Welcome back to another episode of the Here We Read podcast. Today, I'm joined by author Lamar Giles, and I'll let Lamar go ahead and introduce him, but I'm so excited. He is the author of the Alston Boys Adventure chapter book series, and if you haven't heard about the Alston Boys, you're going to love them. You're going to love hearing all about them and their backstory from Lamar during our conversation. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the show, Lamar. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Charnette.
Of course. All right. Why don't we just start off with you just telling people who may not be familiar with you a little bit about who is Lamar Giles, a little bit about your background, family life, all of that kind of stuff.
I am Lamar Giles, as you mentioned, and I am an author. I've been a professional author for 20 years now, and with the bulk of my work coming in the last 10 years as a children's author. I've written several young adult mysteries, Fake ID, Endangered, Overturn, and Spin, which have received various amounts of critical acclaim, I'm happy to say. And I've recently branched into writing for younger children, the middle grade books you mentioned, the Alston Boys books, the first one being The Last Day of Summer. The second is The Last Mirror on the Left. And the third book, which will be out October 19th, is The Last Chance for Logan County. I grew up in a town called Hopewell, Virginia, which was a factory town, is a factory town. My mom was a factory worker for 3 decades. She's retired now. And she was just always big on her children being readers. She was happy to be a factory worker. It was a job that supported us. But she always wanted us to do something different and preferably something with our minds, so that we weren't wearing down our body the way she was in that factory every day. So she made books big in our house, and it's because of her that I make books big in my house in my career right now.
Right. Oh, wow. That's so amazing. All right. We'll talk more about your mom in a minute, but tell me about your family life. I understand you just had your first baby, so why don't we talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Our little girl, Melanie, was born August 12th. So she's almost 7 weeks old. She's a joy, but she doesn't like to sleep at night. I hear that's normal, you know? And oh, yeah. Yeah. And so we've been adjusting and trying to figure out how that part of life works for us now. And it's been amazing. Like an hour before I got on with you, she was just sleeping in my arms because she likes to sleep once it's 8 a.m. And like at least an hour a day, she does that. And I look down at her and it's just, it's mind blowing to me. And I'm sure every parent has gone through this, and I'm not saying anything new, but, I love her to death. It was unexpected, the sort of emotions that I would feel for this little person in my arms. And like I said, if she starts to sleep through the night, then we'll be all good.
Right. Yeah, well, I think you got a little bit longer for that. Yeah. And so congratulations on being a new parent. And if you are not following Dr. Becky, have you heard of her before?
I have not, but I will write this down right now.
Yes. Dr. Becky is the GOAT when it comes to parenting, all things. She's a child psychologist, but she is the expert to know when it comes to all things parenting and, you know, sleeping through the night, working with your kids about their feelings, right? All of these things, and learning really also how to reparent yourself. Even if you don't have kids, I would recommend Dr. Becky. I just listened to a live that she did last night, and she is just amazing. She's not an author yet, but as soon I have a feeling she's going to be coming out with a book very soon. So as soon as that happens, I am definitely going to try to get Dr. Becky on this show because she is amazing. But you can find her on Instagram, Dr. Becky at Good Inside. So.
I'm on it this afternoon.
Yes, for sure. I mean, you are going to learn so much about just, you know, you're being a new parent, right?
Okay. Yeah, and every day is a learning experience.
Every day. So shout out to Dr. Becky. Okay, so let's talk about your career and how you got into this whole writing thing. I know you said your mom was a huge influence, but how did it all start for you? Did you go to college? Did you go to, you know, have any professional training in writing? How did it all begin for you?
I did go to college, but not for writing. Growing up in Hopewell, there weren't working artists. So like this was never on my radar as a kid or teenager as a potential career. Like I barely understood that people made money from writing. Like, of course, you knew there were famous writers like Stephen King, who was big for me growing up, simply because I could always find his books in the grocery store. We didn't have a bookstore in town, and you could always find a Stephen King book there. So like, I knew someone like Stephen King probably somehow made money.
Right, right.
I didn't recognize how it could be an actual job. The only people I ever saw go to work were my mom as a factory worker, people in the military, because we were right next to Fort Lee. So people in the army, teachers, and that sort of thing. So I went to school thinking I was going to do something with computers because that's what everyone said back in the day. Get into computers. That's how you'll make money. And the truth of it was, I just never was great at the math that I needed to complete.
Okay.
To be the computer person, which ended up being a blessing in disguise because I ended up majoring in communications only because the math requirements weren't as stringent. And I was really kind of like hard on myself about not if I couldn't get a B or an A in a class. And during the period of going through that communications major at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, I was flipping through the catalog to pick classes because we did that on paper back then. And I saw there was actually classes you could take in creative writing. I had no clue that was even a thing. Yeah. And I'd always dabbled with writing like secretly. My mom knew, my sister knew, but I didn't tell the fellas, that sort of thing, you know? And the idea that I needed electives and one of the electives could be a creative writing class. I'm like, okay, let's go for it. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
And getting into that class, I met the first writer I ever met, which was a woman named Sherry Reynolds. Who at the time, she had written a book called The Rapture of Canon, which became an Oprah Book Club pick. So like, it was like a huge deal that she was at our university. And I knew I was going to be taking a class with her. And I'm thinking like, I'm going to walk in and I'm imagining like that Charlie Murphy story about when he saw Rick James and they had like an aura. Like I'm thinking I'm going to walk in the room and it's like, there's going to be this glowing aura around this writer. And Sherry was just a tiny lady, super sweet, super Southern, who really took me under her wing. She told me early on that I had some talent. She liked the stuff I turned in class, and she encouraged me to keep taking more classes. And so I just did it as an elective to finish out my degree requirements. But as I went on, I realized that I was going to have to go out and get a job doing something. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting a job at a tech company that I hated.
Okay.
I'm 21 years old and I'm like, okay. And I'm starting to realize that writers can make money. So I'm like, if it's very hard to get into publishing and make money, but it's also super hard for me to get up every morning and go to this cubicle that I hate, right, I might as well spend some energy trying to do the publishing thing.
Okay.
And it became a ritual of I would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning every morning, mm-hmm, right from like 5:30 to 7, then go to my day job. And I did that for 10 years.
Wow.
Sold a few short stories here and there. No money that you could do anything with. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And I couldn't give it up. There were times I was tempted. There were times it felt like a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I got married and I was like, I really could probably use this time to figure out a different way to make more money. But my wife was encouraging and little successes kept happening. And I just kept at it until I eventually was able to sell my first young adult novel, Fake ID, back in 2011. Okay. And so that sort of set everything off from there.
Right. Wow. So a 10-year plus journey, it sounds like, which was amazing. And to have your wife's support, you know, they're cheering you on, must have been super important too. Do you think if your wife wasn't so supportive, you would have continued? Or
I think it would have been difficult because, you know, you reach that point, particularly, you know, you're in a partnership. Marriage is a partnership. And
right,
one partner is like, hey, this is taking away time from what we need to do to keep things moving.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would have faded away.
Right.
And I think more than anything, my wife was very good about, we all need to have things outside of work and outside of our relationship that's just for us. And so she was like, you know, what's wrong with you sitting down and writing your stories? That's not hurting anything. And it makes you feel good. Go for it. And it just so happened I was able to build that into a career.
Right. I love that so much. Shout out to your wife.
Yeah, Adrian's great. Adrian's great. I cannot give her enough credit for the journey we've been on.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And how long have you been married?
It'll be 16 years, 16 and a half years. It'll be 17 years in August.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Yay. So great.
I said August, right. April. I cannot mess that up.
Yeah,
17 years in April.
17 years in April. Okay, got you. So you get your first book deal sold, and then what happens?
So I'll say this, it wasn't a smooth journey to being kind of solvent as a writer. The first book sold, only one editor, and all of New York publishing wanted to take a chance on me. Her name's Phoebe A. If you look her up, you'll see her background is amazing. She's a legend who I don't think gets enough credit for ushering in talent of color.
Okay, Phoebe, what's your last name?
Yay. That's Y-E-H.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so Phoebe brought me in from the time we signed the contract to the time the book got on shelves. It was 27 months. And the thing is, 6 months before that book came out, Phoebe ended up getting like a really great opportunity at another publisher. So okay, our book was edited. You know, we were on the track to get to stores, but then Phoebe's gone. That's my only advocate at that publisher. And so from that point on, it became a really just not a great relationship with that publisher. Mm-hmm. The person who wanted me there, my advocate, was gone. And you could feel that.
Right.
And so
right.
For my first book, very little support. Second book, very little support. I think the only thing that even kept me in the game was that both of those books got nominated for Edgar Awards from the mm-hmm. Mystery Writers of America, which is really a prestigious nomination because it's coming from other mystery writers.
Right.
And those award nominations, I didn't win the awards either of those years, but just those nominations getting me on the radar of other editors, other publishers, it opened up opportunities at places that were much more supportive of my work.
Okay.
So in those first few years, in those first few novels, I didn't make too much money at all. So it was super rough because I'd also gotten laid off from my day job.
Mm.
And so it became a thing where fortunately, over a decade of working, I'd save money. There was a little money coming in from the books in terms of advances. And so my wife, again, being the support system that she is, she's like, hey, you know, we're okay right now. You talked about going to work on your MFA. Do you want to do that? Get your master's and then, you know, you could teach.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking like, I'm just going to get my master's, become a teacher because publishing is not going to work out. Publishers right. not pushing my stuff. And that led down a whole other path that really made it so writing could be the way I make a living, because in my grad school program, I started a draft of what would become my novel, Not So Pure and Simple. Mm-hmm. While I was in school, I ended up publishing two other novels, or writing two. One came out, which was Overturned. Okay. And this snowball effect of having these books come out, the prestige of the nominations puts me on the radar of a film agent in Hollywood named Eric Reed. Eric's my guy. He reached out. He's like, hey, I read this New York Times review of your book Overturned. I want to represent you. And so he comes on. He ends up selling film rights to Fake ID.
Okay.
And then that's another snowball. Now people are paying attention because now you have that announcement. Someone's bought the rights or optioned the rights. And
yeah.
These successes put me on to other publishers, and I end up, my friend Kwame Alexander, who I know you know.
Yes.
At the same time, he's having tremendous success with the Newbery Medal, and he starts an imprint called Versify. And he reaches out to me and says, hey man, I'm starting this thing. Would you have any interest in middle grade? I'm like, of course. And that leads to the Austin Boys. And so all this stuff's coming together after years and years of struggle, and I'm finally above water. And it's just better than I could have ever imagined. Had no clue it would lead this way. And now I'm here talking to you.
Yeah. Wow. So stay in the game is the message that I'm hearing. Stick with it. Even when times get hard, even when you're down in the dumps, right?
I mean, and that's the truth of it is, I honestly don't know what else I could have done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's a certain point where you're so far in, you can't backtrack. And not saying that I would, it was like, you know, I got to keep working the thing that's been working. And that's always been the right.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Wow. I love that story so much. Okay. Let's talk about the Austin Boys, because I love this series so much. You know, this adventure that these boys go on. And it's so good. It's so good. I love the first two books. I didn't even realize that the third book is coming out next month, so I have to get that one.
I tell you what, send me your address. I'll make sure you get a copy.
Okay, thank you so much.
No problem. And I mean, the fact that you don't know is mostly my fault. Like, I have not been on my promo game lately because of everything going on. It's pandemic promotion has been strange. I don't know if any of your other guests have spoken about this.
Not on the show, not publicly, but go ahead and speak on it.
It's a struggle in the sense of we've all been pinned up for going on 2 years now. The idea that, you know, I have a hard time with going on social media and just pushing, hey, I got this thing, please buy it. In my mind, I feel like we're all conditioned to ignore stuff like that. And I much prefer interactions like ours where we're just chatting and talking. And so I haven't been good about the promo for Austin Boys 3. And you'll see more of it from me. But it's hard. I think we're all burnt out and tired from this mode right now.
We are. And yeah, I mean, the fact that I didn't know about it, I mean, I went on your website yesterday, I think, and that's when I saw it. But yeah, I didn't even realize. I kind of figured there was going to be a part three just because of the way that the second one ended. But yeah, I didn't know. It wasn't on my radar, but now it is. So yeah.
You'll see much more about it in the next few weeks as we get up to pub date. But it's tough right now.
It's tough for everybody. It's tough for everybody. So, but congratulations on that. Now I can't wait. I'm going to you got to send it to me. I was about to say.
Give me your address. I'll make sure you get a copy.
Okay. So yeah, that'll be something that we can read next month. Okay. So the third one now, can you say if this is the last book in the series or you got more in you?
There's going to be a pause. I'm not saying it's the last book. I really built this world to keep going as long as they're good ideas.
Okay.
But we're going to change gears a little bit because we've done three where Otto and Sheet are the stars. Again. And in each of the three books, we've always had Wiki and Lean, the Epic Ellison girls.
Right.
And so they're going to get their own book next.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we're going to switch gears, let Wiki and Lean take center stage for a while. And we're going to see how that goes.
Okay. Okay, got you. Yes, awesome. All right, let's talk about your other book, Not So Pure and Simple. How did that kind of, that book, you said, I know you said you started writing it years ago.
Yeah.
And so how did that kind of come about?
Well, I'll describe the premise and then I'll tell you how it happened because it's a whole saga there. And so Not So Pure and Simple is about a boy named Delbert Rainey Jr. who accidentally joins a purity pledge at his church because he likes a girl that's in it.
Okay.
This is a terrible plan, but he does it. And he's the only kid in church who's allowed to take sex ed at his high school. The other kids in the Purity Pledge have a bunch of questions they can't ask their parents or the clergy. And so he becomes like their answer guy. Mm-hmm. And he's being the guy that goes and finds his information in the hopes that they'll help him get closer to this girl he likes.
Okay.
It starts a little bit of a small controversy in this small southern town.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks to a lot of Black church themes of misogyny, homophobia. We address all that. It's a funny book. I mean, those are heavy things, but it's a humorous book where Dale has to consider if he's really a nice guy the way he thinks he is.
Okay.
And it came about as a grad school project initially because I didn't want to cheat when I went to grad school. I'd already published 2 mystery novels. So in my mind, it would have been easy to focus on something I was already doing professionally. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want that sort of notoriety in my cohort. Like, I really tried to hide that I was publishing novels, but that was blown up the first day I got to class.
Right.
But because I'm in the situation, I was like, I'm going to try to write a contemporary coming of age story because I've never done that. And to get out of the program, you really only have to write half a novel. You know, you don't have to finish the book. You have to do like 150 pages, have the committee approve it. And so I did that. And the core premise of a boy joining the Purity Pledge was there. But I had no clue where it was going. Didn't even think I would necessarily ever finish it. But I graduated from my program in spring of 2017. And then around October of 2017 is when the Me Too movement.
Right. Started. Yep. Yep.
And I'm like everybody else, or at least every other dude. I'm sitting there reading these accounts from women about the horrible things that mostly men have done. And I'm just blown away. And I compare it to a white person realizing that racism exists all of a sudden.
Right, right, right.
I'm like, I'm sitting here hearing these stories. And I'm talking to my wife, my mom, my sister. They've got stories. And it's like, I just was so oblivious to it. I was like, what can I do to help?
Yeah.
And the thing I heard over and over was talk to other men. Because for some reason, y'all don't like to listen to us.
Okay.
And I realized I can't have a conversation with every man, but I can talk to my friends. And I have this book that's been sitting that suddenly seems like a way to open up these conversations.
Okay.
To people who happen to get their hands on it, if I could finish it. And so that was the motivation to finish Not So Pure and Simple in the form it is in now. And the goal was, when it came out in early 2020, I'm thinking I'm going to be all over the country in schools like I've been.
Right. Yeah.
We're going to have these conversations. And then March of 2020, the whole world shuts down.
Right. Right.
And so fortunately, technology has allowed some of this conversations to still happen the same way you were talking. But it was nothing like what I anticipated doing when I finished the book. But I'm happy to say it seems like people are still discovering it.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that if young people are reading it in classrooms with their teachers, like they can have those conversations even if I'm not there.
Right, right. Wow. Great. So what are you working on now, if anything that you are allowed to share?
I can talk about some of it.
Okay.
I'm working on a YA novel for Scholastic that we don't have a title for yet, but this has already been announced. It's sort of like a speculative horror novel. It's about a young man who works at a world famous resort that happens to double as a doomsday bunker when society collapses. A bunch of rich investors flee to this resort while the world's burning outside. And the thing is, they insist on having the same level of service they had before the world went away.
Right.
And everybody that works there is pretty much trapped and somewhat enslaved to these cruel billionaires' whims. And it's the story of what that life is like and how they could possibly escape when this seems to be the only refuge on the planet right now.
Wow. Okay. Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. So I'm working on that right now. It's a big swing for me. It's very different than what I've done before, but we're close. Actually, I'll be working on it this afternoon, trying to wrap it up. Another thing I'm doing, I can't really say specifically, I'm doing a graphic novel for a big company that you would be familiar with if I could name it.
Okay.
you can extrapolate that based on all the things you've seen in entertainment over the last few years.
Right.
And then the third thing is Wiki and Lean story. We're trying to wrap that up before the end of the year so it can maybe be out in 2023.
Right, right. Wow. And then you're probably going to be doing your promo for the new Austin Boys coming up.
Yes. I need to get on the promo for the new Austin.
Yes. Can you read us? And I probably should have asked you this before, but do you have anything that you can read from any of your books?
Yeah, I probably have something here. I think I could probably read a little bit from the new Otto and She book.
Okay.
So I'll set it up because I think I should probably start in the middle of this chapter.
Okay.
So this is the first chapter, The Last Chance for Logan County. And what happens is Otto, Sheed, and Grandma have been watching TV on Sunday night like they always have. And a storm's rolled in. So Grandma's telling them to cut the TV off. I don't know if you grew up like that. My grandma was always like, when it's storming, you got to cut it. And as they're doing this, you know, it's Logan County. Nothing is normal. They start to realize this isn't a regular storm.
Okay.
A heavy sheet of rain crashed against the ground, roof, and windows. It became a fast patter with an occasional heavy thump that made Otto, Sheed, and Grandma crane their necks. "Is that hail, Grandma?" Otto asked. "Can't rightly say. The weatherman ain't called for no rain to begin with, so this surprise storm could be a surprise hailstorm, I suppose." Thump, thump. Those thumps were the heaviest yet, and the house shook. A picture frame leapt off the wall, shattering the glass on the wood floor. "Oh," Grandma said, "I don't like that at all. Let's get in the closet." Thump, 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 thump. Otto and Sheed shared a look, both thinking their own version of the same thought. This wasn't a normal storm. Grandma left the den and yanked open the closet door beneath the staircase. "Boys, right now." They weren't going to argue. But before he could get his butt in gear, Sheed heard a new sound, a smack instead of a thump, and it traced back to the nearest window. When he saw what caused it, "Grandma, you should probably see this." She stomped to him. "This better be important because I'm not in the habit of repeating myself, Rasheed Austin." Oh. Grandma stiffened next to Sheed, so of course Otto needed to know what the fuss was about. He strolled to them. While the whole time the odd hail-like noise outside went rapid fire. Thump, thump, smack, smack, thump, smack. Next to his grandma's cousin, Otto saw why. The heavy somethings thumping down among the torrential raindrops weren't hail. They were frogs. Fat, green frogs.
Wow. Thank you for that. Can't wait to read it. Okay. Are Otto and Sheed fictitious characters? I mean, obviously they are, but are they based on people that you know or people that you,
I would say that they're definitely fiction. They're not necessarily people I know, but they are very much inspired by me and my cousins and the way I felt about the way we would play as kids.
Okay.
So, I mean, I had a lot of cousins, a lot of us, all at our grandma's house on the weekend, playing in the backyard. And so I would say Otto and Sheed are like sort of the condensed version of every cousin I have into two different bodies.
Gotcha. Okay.
Going on like exaggerated adventures that could be comparable to what I remember the level of fun was when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Now, I know you probably know a lot of famous authors and, you know, illustrators that you've been in the game for many years, but is there one or a few authors or illustrators that you would love to collaborate with that you haven't already with?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I'll say this off top. I don't know if you saw the Black Boy Joy anthology that came out.
I have, yes.
So I was fortunate enough to be invited to do that. Kwame Mbalia. Yeah. Is the editor. And so I would say that's a collaboration with a lot of writers that I would have named in that question. So in some ways, I've already been able to work with people I would love to work with. And of course, would love to work with again. But as far as people I haven't worked with, like I would love to collaborate with some of my friends, Danielle Clayton, Oli Bemisola, Rude Perkovic. I would love to work with Vashti Harrison, Tiffany D. Jackson. You know, and I could probably go on and on. Raul III, who's also on the Versify imprint, like he's amazing. I love him like a brother. I'd love to work with him. I could honestly, almost everyone I know that I'm friends with, I would love to work with. Jeff Zentner, who writes incredible young adult work. He's one of my best friends in this industry, and I would love to work with him too. So okay. I'm going.
Right, right. Now you've dabbled in the middle grade. Any potential picture books in your
future? Sure. I mean, particularly now that my daughter's here, I'm almost certain that I'll be dabbling in picture books at some time or another. I just kind of got to get past this period of stuff that's already on my plate, you know?
Yeah.
But I certainly would love to do a picture book in the next couple of years, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that for sure. Now that you have, you know, the baby or either picture books or board books, I could definitely see you dabbling in that coming up.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've already got a couple of little ideas, but I'm the type of person where I believe I probably need to study quite a bit of picture books before I make the attempt. I don't think it's a smart thing to just jump into it when you don't have a lot of experience reading it.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. And speaking of reading, she's only she's a month now, right?
Yeah.
How is that going? Like reading, are you reading with her at home?
We have a couple of picture books that friends have gifted us before she was born that we go back to. It seems like, I don't know if I'm just misreading it or I'm imprinting my own joy onto her, but it seems like she's really have enjoyed A Jedi You Will Be by Preeti Chipper. which is a Star Wars picture book. And Dapo Adiala, who illustrated the first two Austin Boys books, has a picture book called Hey You, which is a collaboration between him and a ton of other illustrators. And so we've gone through that with her several times. And it seems she gurgles. So I take that as approval, you know? And then we do audio books. Like, what were we listening to? We were listening to my books. We were listening to Not So Fair and Simple and Spin sometimes at night when we're sitting up with her. My wife started that, which again, can't credit her enough for being cool like she is. She's like, you're going to listen to some of Daddy's books tonight. So we'll do audio books too.
Love it. What are your hopes and dreams for your daughter? I know parenting is a very special time if you are blessed to have the opportunity to be a parent. But when you think about your new baby girl and just thinking about the way the world is today and all of that, what are your kind of hopes and dreams for your daughter?
I would say it's three things. Health, happiness, and safety. I want to do whatever I can to make sure she grows up healthy. That's physically, mentally. I want her to be happy and pursue the things she wants to pursue. My mom never put limits on us. You know, it was like, if it's something to interest you, tell me what you need to make it happen. That's something I would want to emulate. And then just safety. I mean, you know, again, having had the veil ripped off my eyes several years ago, I'm really cognizant of how harsh the world can be for girls, particularly Black girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something I'm going to have to work with my wife with to try to navigate and prepare her for. I don't necessarily know what that looks like yet. We're still learning how to be her parents. But I do want to go into it knowing she may have a different set of difficulties than other girls who aren't Black.
Mm-hmm.
And just be able to prepare her for whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. So great. And how about aspiring writers? I know there are some people that listen to the show that are, you know, want to potentially be a writer, don't know where to start. You've been in the game, you've stayed in the game. So can you speak to just advice or tips or tricks or maybe some apps or, you know, anything that you find beneficial to you as an author that you can pass along to others?
Sure. It's a couple of things here that I have found to be the most useful advice when I was trying to break in. And even still today, this stuff applies. One of it being, and I feel like this is something that may have fallen out of style, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like people concentrate on short stories as much. Mm-hmm. And when I was coming up, that was the way you broke in. You wrote short stories. You sold short stories. I don't know who even buys them anymore other than anthologies, which you tend to have to be invited to. So I can understand how people may not concentrate on that as much. But the thing about a short story, and this is advice that came from a writer named Stephen Barnes, who I admire a great deal, is that the learning curve for short stories is quicker than the learning curve for novels, where you can write a short story in a day or a week, where a novel could take you a whole year. So the same amount of time you're trying to finish a novel and learn how to do beginning, middle, and end, You could do 52 short stories, one a week.
Okay.
And you're constantly building your skill and knowledge, beginning, middle, and end, as opposed to starting a novel that you may or may not finish. And so I still believe there's great value in practicing the short story form if you're just trying to get better at craft and give yourself a better shot at breaking in.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the next part of that is practice finishing. Because as I said, it's not that you won't ever start a project and that you won't abandon, but you want to train yourself to abandon less projects, because you can't really sell an unfinished novel.
Gotcha. Wow. That was so good.
I'll add this. I will say all those tips.
Finishing. I mean, go ahead.
Keep I would going. Say all those tips. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
Those tips are embedded in craft. That's not about your social media presence. It's not about your popularity. Like, I'm really old school in the sense of you work on your writing. I'm not great at the social media stuff. I don't know that I even want to be, even after all these years. I think the core of it is work on writing the sort of stories you want to write to completion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Practice finishing. I think that's what I'm going to title this episode.
Yeah, please do. I really honestly think that's an important thing. That's the most important skill, actually.
Yeah, that's so good. So just training yourself to actually finish things and see them to completion, which is what you've done technically, right? From with your whole writing career.
I'm trying. I mean, and I'll say this to anyone listening, it doesn't get easier.
Yeah.
It feels as hard today as it did when I was 20 years old, but I love it.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. Anything else, Lamar, that you want to add? Something maybe that we didn't cover?
Just want to thank you. I appreciate you inviting me on. I feel a bit out of practice ever since the summer hit and I knew the baby was coming. I haven't done much talking to other people outside my house, so I'm happy to have this conversation. I just appreciate you for letting me come on.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for saying yes. And Lamar, where can people find you on social media, your website, all that stuff?
My website is my name, lamargiles.com. I'm Lamar Giles on Instagram and at LR Giles on Twitter.
Thank you so much, Lamar. I really enjoyed talking to you and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the conversation.
You're so welcome.
Now it's time for your 30-second book review. Hunger has no boundaries. It can affect people from all walks of life across the world. Millions of people are just one job loss, one paycheck, or medical emergency away from hunger. Food insecurity exists in every community, regardless of geography. Over the past year and a half, unemployment and food insecurity has soared. In 2020, over 60 million people turned to food banks and community programs for help putting food on the table. The picture book, Saturday at the Food Pantry, introduces readers to Molly. It's a Friday night and Molly and her mom are eating chili for dinner again. They've had it every day for dinner this week. Molly's mom scoops out the last bit of chili into their bowls and they eat. But Molly still goes to bed hungry with a growling tummy. The next day is Saturday. It's the day Molly and her mom go to their local food pantry to get groceries. In the beginning, Molly is excited to be at the food pantry, but after a while, she starts to feel embarrassed and ashamed. Then she remembers the words her mom told her. Everybody needs help sometimes. This is such a great book that tackles the topic of food insecurity in a way that's easy for children to understand. It teaches kids that it's okay to turn to places like food pantries in times of need. Having access to fresh food is a human right and no one should have to go to bed hungry. Check out Saturday at the Food Pantry if you're interested. Recommended for ages 4 to 8 and up. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to tune in next time where I'll be chatting books with a few of my friends. I'll be joined by author Frank Murphy and illustrator Kayla Heron. They're going to join me for a special episode all about friendship. Of course, we are talking about our picture book published by Sleeping Bear Press called A Friend Like You. We're looking for a few great sponsors for the show for next season. Are you interested in sponsoring an episode of the show or a few episodes of the show? If so, feel free to reach out to me via email and let me know. You can email me at hereweread.podcast@gmail.com. If you enjoyed today's show and if you feel inclined, please be sure to subscribe so you won't miss an episode. And if you'd like, you can leave me a review. Until next time, my friends, keep reading.
Thank you for listening to the Here We Read podcast. Music by Emily Arrow and DCQ Beats. Produced by me, Sharnay Gordon, with Switch and Board. Editing by Switch and Board.
Switch and Board.